Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi says sanctions, terrorism and war are major issues plaguing the world, all of which stem from unilateralism. A Pakistan High Court drops terrorism charges against former Prime Minister Imran Khan, saying his alleged offence doesn't justify such charges. And Moscow rejects Kiev's war crimes accusations, saying allegations of mass graves in a Ukrainian city are nothing but lies and fabrications. Hello and good morning. Welcome to World News. Thank you for joining us. Iran's president says sanctions, terrorism and war are the major issues plaguing the world today. Ebrahim Raisi says they are all the results of unilateralism and must be addressed through collective wisdom. Raisi made the remarks upon arrival in New York City, where he will make his debut at the UN General Assembly. The Iranian president said sanctions have become a weapon of choice in the hands of major powers to pressure other countries. Raisi said the countries targeted will naturally hit back, and so peace and security are threatened and nations harmed. The Iranian president noted that the United Nations should live up to its name and not be monopolized by powerful countries. He stressed that issues affecting the world should be settled through global participation. Earlier, we asked journalist and political analyst Elia Magnier about the importance of Raisi's visit to New York for the UN General Assembly. Here's what he had to tell us.
Importance of this visit is it comes just a few days after the Shanghai Cooperation Organization meeting, where the representative of half of the world were in one room, and Iran had become an official part of the organization that calls also to end the U.S. unilateralism over the world. And President Raisi is in a position today to criticize again the U.S. unilateral and illegal sanctions on the Iranian population, which is the right of Iran to live in dignity without being under the harsh sanctions imposed by the U.S. So it is an opportunity for Iran to slam the U.S. sanctions again, and also to show to the world that it's possible to survive without the U.S. hegemony, even with very harsh U.S. sanctions.
The U.S. says it will blacklist three Iranian cargo planes for allegedly violating its sanctions on Russia. The U.S. Commerce Department says it will add the Boeing 747 airplanes to a list of planes believed to violate U.S. export controls. The move is part of Washington's sanctions over Russia's war in Ukraine. The Commerce Department claims the planes operated by Mahan Air, Qeshm Fars Air and Iran Air are transporting goods, including electronic items, to Russia. The three Iranian airlines are already subject to a variety of restrictions by the U.S. government. Iran is commemorating its National Sacred Defense Week, which marks the beginning of the 1980s war between Iran and Iraq. Iraq's War University has hosted a ceremony to recount the humanitarian impacts of the eight-year war. Yusuf Jalali reports.
Free pigeons for a world free of war. Iran's War University hosted the director of the United Nations Information Center in Iran, Inger Marie Venise, along with military attachés from different embassies. To attend this ceremony, dubbed the Book of Peace and Defense, which is themed with the 1980s Iran-Iraq War. The UNIC head read out a statement from United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres during the event.
A time to the 24 hours of non-violence and ceasefire, we renew our call for all people to do more than lay down their weapons.
This event comes on the occasion of the National Sacred Defense Week, which marks the beginning of the 1980 to 1988 Iran-Iraq War, the longest armed conflict of the 20th century, which was waged by the then Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein and heavily funded by the West. Every year on the occasion, the Islamic Republic holds nationwide ceremonies to highlight its resistance against the Iraqi forces.
At that time, the Ba'athist regime, and on top of it, Saddam Hussein, was fully supported by numerous Western countries. The war continued for 8 years, but we fought the invaders and did not give an inch of our soil to them. So today, we as veterans feel bound to transfer our expertise and tactics to the new generation to preserve our defense might.
Saddam Hussein failed to make any achievement in his war against Iran, but the humanitarian effects of the offensive are still lingering in Iran, with many war veterans continuing to reel from exposure to chemical substances used by Iraqi forces. Those chemical materials were reportedly supplied by a number of German, French, and Dutch corporations.
The Islamic Republic takes great pride in how it defended the country during the Iraqi-imposed war, calling it the sacred defense and a drive for its present self-sufficiency in the military sector. Meanwhile, Tehran holds this annual commemoration ceremony as a chance to promote peace and shed light on the dark consequences of war. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
A Pakistani court has dropped terrorism charges against former Prime Minister Imran Khan. The charges are related to a speech by Khan in August. In it, he allegedly threatened police and judicial officers after one of his close aides was denied bail. According to his lawyers, the court said Khan's alleged offense didn't attract terrorism charges. But his case will remain intact and will now be tried in an ordinary court. Khan has denied that his remarks were meant as a threat. The former premier has faced several lawsuits since his ousting in April following a vote of no confidence won by opposition parties. Turning now to Ukraine, where the war is entering its seventh month. Moscow has rejected Kiev's claims committing war crimes in the Ukrainian city of Kharkiv after it fell into Russian hands. Moscow says the allegations of mass graves in the Ukrainian city are nothing but lies and fabrications. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov said Moscow would stand up for the truth in the story. Last week, some 450 graves were discovered in a forest area after the Ukrainian army recaptured the strategic eastern city from Russian forces. President Vladimir Zelensky claimed that investigations of the site revealed signs of violent death, accusing Russia of committing war crimes. Moscow, however, has refuted the accusations of extrajudicial killings over there. Another damning report on big oil. Major oil companies have been found guilty yet again when it comes to their climate-related commitments. Although this doesn't surprise anyone, it puts into question the oversight on these energy conglomerates, from emissions to their energy green commitments. And now that they are making record profits, the heat is on for them to be held accountable and to follow through in preventing global warming.
Oil and gas, two commodities that have been at the center of news for months now, mainly due to the conflict in Ukraine. One of the criticisms leveled against these oil and gas giants are the record profits that they are raking in.
It is immoral for oil and gas companies to be making record profits from this energy crisis on the back of the poorest people and communities and at a massive cost to the climate.
Bombshell report, however, is putting the spotlight more on these oil companies, but for the wrong reasons. Like this headline, criticism intensifies after big oil admits gaslighting public over green aims, which goes on to say, fury as explosive files reveal largest oil companies contradicted public statements and wished bedbugs upon critical activists, like this one.
And here today, we're going to be out demanding that the City of London, which is responsible or oversees about 15% of fossil fuel funding, could actually very, very rapidly, you know, get this source of finance switched off and move towards a green economy.
Here are the opening statements of the Oversight Committee.
Today we are holding our third hearing in the committee's investigation into the fossil fuel industry's decades-long climate disinformation and greenwashing campaigns.
Big oil, namely ExxonMobil, Chevron, Shell, and BP, are at the center of controversy again and yet again, lying about keeping in line with climate change restrictions.
But these executives refused to commit to real changes.
What kind of lies? Here's one example.
But it is more than having to change. We want to change. We want to change because it's the right thing for the world, and it's a tremendous business opportunity for BP.
It was not too long ago when these headlines and pictures were plastered on the front pages of newspapers around the world. Climate change alarm, code red for humanity. Yet these alarm bells fail to stop these big oil companies from advancing their agenda, making money at the expense of people for their shareholders. While these companies are making record profits, it is worth noting the economic costs of climate change. The global cost of adapting to the climate impacts is expected to grow $140 to $300 billion per year by the year 2030 and $280 to $500 billion per year by the year 2050.
When it comes to climate change, the lies and deceits are not restricted to big oil companies alone. Many corporations are also guilty of misleading the general public through a process called greenwashing. Greenwashing is when companies lie about following a green guideline when it comes to their production, no matter what industry they are in.
To get the full impact of what these energy conglomerates are doing, the bare facts need to be known. According to a report published by the Carbon Majors Database in 2017, just 100 of them have been the source of more than 70% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions since the year 1988. If fossil fuels continue to be extracted at the same rate over the next 28 years as they were between 1988 and 2017, global temperatures would rise by 4 degrees Celsius by the end of the century. What is shocking is that these large corporations like Exxon knew about climate change almost 50 years ago. In 2015, it was revealed that Exxon understood the science before it became a public issue. It was called the Climate Deception Dossiers.
The reality of global warming began making front page headlines nearly 30 years ago. That's when the world's largest fossil fuel companies launched a three-decade campaign to deceive the public and delay action on climate change.
The worst part about these findings was that ExxonMobil spent millions of dollars to promote misinformation about the issue. The goal? To sow doubt about climate change. Let that sink in. Because these dossiers revealed that the coalition of fossil fuel companies had launched a big communications effort to sow doubt. Their motto, victory will be achieved when the average person is uncertain about climate science. Then in 2019, it was reported that major global firms were accused of concealing their environmental impact. This included more than 700 companies like Facebook, Amazon, Tesco, and here we go again, ExxonMobil. They were accused of lacking transparency over things like water shortages and deforestation. How these non-oil and gas companies do this is that they do what's called greenwashing, conveying a false impression that one's products are environmentally friendly or sound, when in essence, they are not. And here are some of the companies that are guilty of this. Famous brands known the world over, claiming that they have gone green, but in essence, they have not. Whether it was the Paris Climate Accord or COP26.
And we arrive at what I believe is the moment of truth.
Or John Kerry.
It is time to come together for future generations in ways that none of us really ever thought we might have an opportunity to do.
All of that appears to be on the shelf for now. With a lack of energy resources, European countries and the U.S. are scrambling to fill the shortages, even if it includes resorting to big CO2 emitters like fossil fuels.
A Yemeni human rights group has released a report on what it calls Saudi Arabia's violations of a UN-backed truce since its beginning in April. Abdul Latif Al-Washali has more in this report.
Amid international calls for renewing the UN-brokered truce, the Yemeni Center for Human Rights has held a press conference in Sana'a to release a report titled The Alleged Truce. The report highlights the Saudi-led coalition's violations of the UN agreement since it was brokered in April.
Saudi Arabia's violations were committed from the first day of the war, but they continued even under the UN truce. The most important violations were the non-compliance with the terms of the truce, which included reducing the number of scheduled flights and specifying only one destination instead of two, as well as the continued detention of fuel ships. There is a breach on the essence of the agreement.
The report says the Saudi-led coalition has committed over 14,000 violations, including waging 278 airstrikes, which led to the death of Yemeni civilians.
As a human rights center, we affirm that the most important violations are the loss of life. Unfortunately, during the truce, 70 Yemeni civilians, including women and children, were killed. The siege has also continued during the truce. This has caused the deaths of thousands of civilians due to the lack of fuel in hospitals.
Recently, the UN Security Council urged warring sides in Yemen to extend the truce, saying it has had tangible benefits for the humanitarian situation in the war-torn country. So far, there are no signs of agreement from both parties.
A complete end to the war and siege is what Yemenis are demanding from the international community, including the United Nations. They say the temporary truce should not be extended since the world body has failed to ensure its full implementation. Al-Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
And the coffin of Queen Elizabeth II has been lowered into the British Royal Vault in Windsor Castle, where a further private service will be held. The Queen will be buried in St. George's Chapel alongside her father, King George II, the Queen's mother and her sister. Last year, Prince Philip, the Queen's husband, was also laid to rest there. Leaders and representatives of different countries attended her state funeral, which took place after 10 days of mourning. Monday has already been declared a public holiday. Elizabeth died on September 8th at the age of 96 after reigning more than 70 years as Britain's monarch. Well, those were the top stories for this hour. Thanks for joining me.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Iran's full membership at Shanghai Cooperation Organization shows that U.S. policies toward the Islamic Republic have failed. The four decades-long struggle by the West to isolate Iran became ineffective after Iran's foreign minister signed a memorandum of obligations, a key step in becoming a full member of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, SCO, in a recent meeting with Secretary General of the SCO, Zhang Ming. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media in order to know more about the developments in this summit. Stay tuned for more. According to Global Times, Chinese President Xi Jinping delivered an important speech on Friday, September 16th, at the summit of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, SCO, in Samarkand, Uzbekistan, emphasizing the need to follow the guidance of the Shanghai spirit as they forge ahead. President Xi pointed out that under new conditions, the SCO, as an important constructive force in international and regional affairs, should keep itself well-positioned in the face of changing international dynamics, ride on the trend of the times, strengthen solidarity and cooperation, and build a closer SCO community with a shared future. The speech received an enthusiastic reaction and resonance at the scene of the meeting, becoming one of the most closely watched and essential parts of the SCO summit. At the summit, leaders of the SCO member states signed the Samarkand Declaration, expressing their unanimous attitude of ruling out bloc, ideologically charged and confrontational approaches to current international and regional development issues, and reaffirming the importance of promoting cooperation in the development of international relations of a new kind in the spirit of mutual respect, equality, and mutually beneficial cooperation, as well as in building a community with a shared future for mankind. In this process, China's role is evident to all. The Global Development Initiative, GDI, and Global Security Initiative, GSI, put forward by the Chinese leader were a response to the concerns of regional countries and have become an increasingly broad and firm consensus in the international community. In stark contrast to the spirit of the SCO, the US-led West is trying to build a Cold War-style alliance based on ideological criteria, leading to the wave of counter-globalization and confrontational split that the world is now experiencing. Deng Kao, Secretary General of the China Center for SCO Studies, told the Global Times recently, "The US-led West is now putting extreme pressure on Russia while not reducing its containment of China," Deng said. "The geopolitical stakes are at an unprecedentedly high level. Against this backdrop, the sense of crisis and uncertainty facing the vast majority of developing countries has clearly increased. Countries that have not entered the West small clique have attached great importance to this visit of President Xi and are clearly and eagerly looking forward to his visit," Deng said. "This visit is believed to bring confidence and hope to the world," he said, "because they saw China's development and are more in agreement with the ideas and propositions put forward by China." At the summit, Iran officially became a full SCO member. Asia Times also reported negotiations to build a new pipeline designed to transport annually 50 billion cubic meters of gas from Russia to China through Mongolia are expected to close soon after the three countries' leaders met in Uzbekistan. Chinese President Xi Jinping, Russian President Vladimir Putin, and Mongolian President Ukna Kramslake held a face-to-face meeting in Samarkand on the sideline of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization SCO summit. The three leaders agreed to actively move forward on the Mongolian section of the China-Russia natural gas pipeline known as Power of Siberia 2. Russian Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak was quoted as saying by Russia's TASS news agency that the Power of Siberia 2 deal would close in the near future. The progress was made recently the same day when Xi and Putin held a bilateral meeting to discuss economic partnership and geopolitical issues, including Ukraine and Taiwan matters. Also, Al Jazeera English wrote, Iran has signed a memorandum of obligations to become a permanent member of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, SCO, a Central Asian security body, the Iranian foreign minister said. Hossein Amir Abdullahian wrote on social media, by signing the document for full membership of the SCO, now Iran has entered a new stage of various economic, commercial, transit and energy cooperation.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and let us reflect on a bezel of wisdom from Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, the grandson of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Sitting with the intelligent is a sign of success. Disputation with other than the disbelievers is a sign of ignorance, while a sign of a scholar is his self-criticism of his sayings and his acquaintance with the various hypotheses.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, social justice and Islam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of social justice and Islam in the Islamic lifestyle. When we look at the Islamic teachings, we see that Islam has paid attention to the social justice, and it is one of the necessities that a Muslim must observe. And therefore, in the Quran, we said that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said, "Inna Allah ya'muru bil adli wal ihsan." Allah has ordered us to observe the justice and the kindness amongst the people. On the other hand, we know that Imam Ali alayhi salam also has said that جعل الله سبحانه العدل قواما للأنام. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made justice a firm thing for the mankind. The justice causes firmness for the mankind. وَتَنْزِيحًا مِنَ الْمَظَالِمِ وَالْآثَامِ. And this is the way of purification from the oppression and the sins that generally people commit. And تَسْنِيَةً لِلْإِسْلَامِ. And with this, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made Islam be proud. And Islam is proud to have justice. We know that even the difference between the capitalism, socialism, and the Islamic economics or the Islam is that Islam talks about justice, where we do not see any kind of justice in capitalism and even in socialism. The socialism have its own ideas about the economics And capitalism also is have its own ideas for the investors only, or the people who are basically who wants to maximize their profit. But Islam talks about justice. The distribution of the reserves and the distribution of the wealth according to justice amongst the people. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of social justice and Islam, and we said that Islam pays attention to the justice, and according to the saying of Imam Ali, it is Islam is proud to have justice as its main theme, as its core theme. And the things that we see which is in Islam and which is not in the other even economical systems or political systems or any kind of system that we take, that is the justice. Even in educational system, we don't have justice. Therefore, it is Islam that is bringing justice, and it is proud to have it. Why? Because this justice makes the society pure. It brings purification in the society and in ourselves, because if I am just in my life, if I observe justice in my life, I'm not wasting. Justice, observing justice means that I am not wasting anything. I'm not wasting my time, the reserves that we have, the wealth, the money that I have. I'm not wasting the relationship that I have with others, with my parents, brothers, sisters, kids, wife. So in all things, I'm observing justice. And when I observe justice, people know me as a good man, as a person who is always striving for the good, and he's against the falsehood. And when we have such people in the society, obviously society starts to change. And on top of that, we know that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has put this justice in our innate, which is known as fitrah, that people, according to the intellectual, according to the fitrah which they have, even according to the nature, they love justice. They do not like injustice, corruption, bloodshed. They don't like all these things. The things which they like is that is adl, that is justice and ihsan. And we must observe justice, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
World Cleanup Day unites millions of volunteers, governments and organizations to tackle the global waste problem and build a sustainable world. People in several countries joined the efforts again for a waste-free world. Volunteers were seen in mangrove forests in the suburb of Bangkok. They collected more than 1.5 tons of rubbish in just a few hours. Trash picking events were also held in the Philippines and Vietnam.
In Hanoi, hundreds, mostly students, armed with metal tongs and sacks, walked along major roads. They said their aim is to raise awareness about protecting the environment. In Manila, people cleaned up the city's beaches that are major tourist attractions. The annual cleanup day has been running for over a decade. From divers collecting marine debris to children picking up trash on beaches have just one goal: make our planet a cleaner place.
Chinese astronauts are celebrating their first ever mid-autumn festival in outer space while sharing their otherworldly experience with people on Earth. The crew had a close-up view of the moon from China's Tiangong space station and their third month in space. On the occasion, the ground crew organized a series of celebrations, including a family reunion for the astronauts. The ground crew also prepared elaborate food packages that had been prepared before the launch of the spacecraft. Typically, the traditional festival is kicked off by the first viewing of the full moon on the 15th day of the eighth month of the lunar calendar. Despite being able to see the moon rise and set 16 times a day, the astronauts say the moon is special on this occasion. Forestry authorities in southwestern China have opened a new canteen for wild Asian elephants in a bid to stop them wandering into villages. The canteen in Yunnan province provides the animals with attractive and nutritious meals while exploring man-animal harmonious coexistence. During these years, the province has explored multiple ways to reduce the encounters between humans and elephants and try to keep the animals away from farmers' crops. There are now approximately 1,400 hectares of dining halls for elephants, with many expanding from 100 to 240, such as corn, rice, and sugarcane. They are planted on a large scale and within easy reach of the elephants. The location of such canteens is extremely selective, usually away from villages and major roads, and the chefs are locals. Most of the time, you have to visit an exhibition to see art. But what if art comes to see you instead? Well, a group of artists in Mali have created a floating art venue that will travel up and down the River Niger. It's called the Pirogue du Zem, which is a floating vessel. It's designed to host plays, exhibitions, dance shows, and so much more. The idea is to make art a movable feast that is no longer restricted to fixed venues in cities and accessible to all people. The project was created by a local artist and architect who had a vision to bring art to the masses. The vessel is 20 meters long and 6 meters wide, built with storage and enough space for exhibition. Government officials say the floating venue will showcase Mali's talents and creativity while attracting tourists.
Colombia is known for its tourist attractions and is full of breathtaking natural sights such as beaches, mountains, deserts, and forests. The South American nation is also one of the few places that give tourists the chance to have an encounter with whales. Every year, from July to October, domestic and foreign tourists flock to Colombia's Pacific coast to catch a glimpse of humpback whales. The large animals reach the coast after traveling thousands of kilometers from Antarctica and southern Chile. But for visitors, there are strict rules to help preserve the area and the whales. Tourists are now being welcomed for whale watching after a two-year hiatus due to the coronavirus pandemic. This is also the time when humpback whales start their reproductive process. arch restoration requires intensive research and training and loads of skill. But imagine the anxiety while professionals embark on restoring rare paintings. Under careful supervision, French restorers are working to give back to 500-year-old paintings their former glory. They were rescued from a fire that engulfed the Notre-Dame Cathedral in Paris in 2019. These works date back from the 17th and early 18th century. The paintings, including 22 with large format, were temporarily stored in a warehouse and now being restored at an undisclosed location. The fire caused strictly no damage to the paintings, but they have accumulated thick layers of dirt and smoke on the surface after hanging in the cathedral for centuries. Some of the works also have paint loss due to overcleaning that restorers say need to be repaired elegantly.
Africa is taking back some of its greatest treasures stolen by the British back in the 19th century. The Horniman Museum in London has agreed to return the artifacts to Nigeria. These are 72 relics, which include 12 highly treasured brass plaques known as the Benin Bronzes. The bronzes are a group of several thousand metal plaques and sculptures that decorated the royal palace of the once mighty kingdom of Benin since the 16th century. These artifacts were looted from a region in modern-day Nigeria in a British military incursion. They later ended up in museums in Europe and the U.S. African countries have been fighting to recover works pillaged by explorers and colonizers as Western institutions grapple with the cultural legacy of colonialism.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Illegal hunting and hybridization with American crocodiles have for decades threatened their populations, with some species being on the verge of extinction. But there are some people who put their lives at risk to save the natural heritage. A Cuban researcher has released a baby crocodile that was confiscated from illegal hunters back into the wild. It was a happy moment for Etienne Perez, who went waist-deep in the dark water of Zapata Swamp to free Cuban crocs, the smallest known range of any living crocodile species. Cuban scientists were racing for quite some time to save the rarest crocodile. The government has protected virtually all of the vast swamp, widely considered to be the best preserved in the Caribbean. But the scientists say more efforts are needed to save the nature.
Releasing crocodile seized from poachers is really impressive because we return the animal to a free life in the wild. In the case of the animals in the hatchery, we are trying to increase the historical range of the Cuban crocodile and, of course, increase the number of these individuals in the wild.
Cuban scientists estimate that around 4,000 crocodiles continue to live in the wild. But because the area they prefer within the wetland is relatively small, a climate-related disaster, increasingly common now globally, could wipe out the brunt of the population. They say illegal hunting for decades is also threatening crocodile populations. A wide range of cutting-edge digital technology is grabbing the limelight at the 2022 China International Fair for Trade in Services, which is underway in Beijing. The exhibition is featuring a wide range of products, including artificial intelligence, virtual reality, metaverse, and 5G. Visitors can be seen taking virtual reality driving lessons and enjoying scenarios, including different road and weather conditions, wearing VR kits. It's the leading and largest comprehensive fair for trade and services in China. This year, an increasing number of traditional service companies are speeding up their transformations, resorting to smart technologies. The event has set up 9 thematic exhibitions, including cultural and tourism services, education and sports services, hygiene and health services, engineering, consulting, and environmental services. Foam is fun to play with, particularly for kids, but when it's mixed with art, it also becomes a grown-up matter. And that's what a German artist has done, creating a sea of rainbow-colored foam as an interactive art piece and allowing the audience to enjoy themselves and become part of the art. Colors mixed by Stephanie Luning were turned into rainbow-hued foam cascading down the stairs. The performance was called Island of Foam, version 18. Excited children jumped in as soon as the bubbly sea reached the base of the stairs, delighted to be playing in the rainbow playground. The art piece is made up of largely of water and a food coloring. The artist says she loves working in public spaces and reaching a broad audience of all ages.
Because I like to be surprised by the result myself, and I like to work with this that you never know how it's going to turn out. You have the wind, the weather conditions, the locations, the audience. You never know how the people are going to respond and how the artwork turns out. And that's really what I like a lot, and also how to reach a broad audience.
However, Stephanie says there's tons of work behind all the fun, and cleaning up the mess can be hard. Interactive art is a form of art that achieves this purpose by involving the audience. The immersive art piece is part of the Greenwich and Docklands International Festival, an annual festival of performing arts and outdoor theatre. Have you ever heard of fighting nature with nature? Well, that's what the San Francisco Metro system in the U.S. did to stop pigeons from overrunning the place. The station has hired a hawk as the new guard to patrol the area. Pac-Man is a 5-year-old Harris's hawk who has taken up the perch at the station. In terms of experience, he is pretty new, as he finished training only 9 months ago. The station recently renovated its building, installing netting and spikes to prevent pigeons from nesting. But these bears still seem to find their way to hang around. So with the Falconer Force, Ricky Ortiz and his hawk were hired this summer to keep the pigeons at bay.
So a typical day is we get here, we make our round, we start off down in the bottom inside the facility, making sure there's no pigeons hanging out in there. And then we work our way up here to the platforms and just check the ledges and the roof and make sure that they're not trying to sneak in on us, and keep them out. And he does a pretty good job of that.
The team patrols 3 days a week, and Pac-Man is allowed to swoop in and scare any pigeons sitting around. The Falconer says less than half of the pigeons they left after the first week of Pac-Man flying and establishing the territory. Commuters and station managers say they also noticed the difference. The Falconer says he usually keeps his feathery friend happy on the job by giving him snacks throughout the day. This also encourages the hawk not to feast on the pigeons and local rodents.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
After the death of Queen Elizabeth, the issue of colonialism by the British during long decades came to mind. But what we should consider is that colonialism still exists around us. When social media companies, including Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, silence the users who speak against colonialism, it means colonialism still exists. When the fabricated regime of Israel continues its crimes against innocent Palestinians and the world body is silent, it means colonialism still exists. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media for further details. Stay tuned, please. In the aftermath of the announcement of the death of the British Queen Elizabeth, Juju Ann, a professor at Carnegie Mellon University, tweeted, "I heard the chief monarch of a thieving, raping, genocide empire is finally dying. May her pain be excruciating." Twitter deleted the tweet, and Carnegie Mellon put out a statement effectively condemning Anne's remarks, each of which are absurd and dubious, as others have noted. But then Anne retweeted a tweet from Eugene Scott, national political reporter at the Washington Post. "Real question for the now is not the appropriate time to talk about the negative impact of colonialism, crowd. When is the appropriate time to talk about the negative impact of colonialism? The answer to Scott's question, when is the appropriate time to talk about the negative impact of colonialism, is every day. You're swimming in it." "9/11 was a good occasion to talk about the negative impacts of colonialism, how the US, British and French governments caught up the Mideast, leading to the rise of a colonial Israel and oppressive monarchies, the massive propaganda campaign that effectively began 20 years ago to invade Iraq should now be the focus of sustained attention if we had a cultural and media environment wanting to finally come to terms with its imperialist mindset, waging wars of aggression, occupying entire countries, and employing systematic torture for those ends in the 21st century. In July, Michael Langley was tapped to become head of the United States Africa Command. Scott, over at the Washington Post, took this occasion to effectively celebrate him, saying, "If he's confirmed, Michael Langley will become the first black person to receive 4 stars since the founding of the U.S. Marine Corps 246 years ago. Over that time, more than 70 white men have risen to the Marines' highest ranks." The Black Alliance for Peace, meanwhile, has been running a campaign against Africa, to the silence of many. "The purpose of AFRICOM is to use U.S. military power to impose U.S. control of African land, resources, and labor to service the needs of the U.S. multinational corporations and the wealthy in the United States." The Black Alliance for Peace reports that African countries initially rejected AFRICOM, but with a more sophisticated approach by the Obama administration, corrupt African leaders began to allow African forces to operate in their countries and establish military-to-military relations with the United States. Bringing up colonialism only in the context of the death of the nearly 100-year-old British monarch is actually functional at a certain level for the establishment. It pretends it's a relic of the past rather than a force that continues to maliciously mold the world today. Postings relating the late monarch and colonialism on various lefty, progressive, and even mainstream websites have good information about horrific British oppression in Kenya, India, and Yemen elsewhere. Yet, they have a tendency to drop off in 1960s or 1970s, as if various US and British invasions and bombings since then have not been an effective continuation of the imperial project. What is needed is the hard work of scrutinizing the mechanisms of power. Colonialism may not today provide the photo op of a brazen sword in the hand of a monarch, but their entire military and economic systems, as well as soft power mechanisms that have allowed colonialism to effectively mutate into more effective but deadly strains. Consider, for example, that with the invasion of Iraq, the main US government partnering crime was Britain. Colonialism continues to not only cast a massive shadow, but to actively mold the world around us. At times, this is done by shallow rebranding. At times, such tendencies are manifested through more subtle instruments. The Zionist regime is a main continuation of actual settler colonialism. The Bank of England in 2018 announced the policy of refusing to release hundreds of millions of dollars of Venezuelan gold. Currently, as Afghans face starvation, Biden is withholding $7 billion of their money. Colonialism, or at least its rebranded oppressive offspring, is all around us and should be talked about every single day. Meanwhile, RT reported that the Prime Minister of Antigua and Barbuda has pledged, if re-elected, to hold a referendum on becoming a republic and removing the British monarch as the Caribbean nation's head of state. Gaston Browne's announcement came just 2 days after the death of Queen Elizabeth, although the Premier stressed that his proposal should not be considered an act of hostility. Speaking to ITV recently after a formal ceremony proclaiming the Queen's son, King Charles, as the new monarch, Browne said the referendum would take place within the next 3 years. The initiative does not represent any form of disrespect to the monarchy, but reflects long-standing aspirations of Antigua and Barbuda people, the Prime Minister explained.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent. As you know, this program aims to address the most important issues in the South Asian region that affect the governments, organizations, communities, and most importantly, the people. And as always, we will dissect the issues and present you with different perspectives from experts and people. So, stay tuned.
In this edition of The Subcontinent, how the story of Karbala and the sacrifice of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, unites the people of the Indian subcontinent. And we will see how India buying oil from Russia may affect the foreign policy and economy of this country.
Every year, at an event known as the largest annual gathering in the world, several million people gather together in Iraq for Arbaeen, the 40th day of the tragedy of Karbala, when Imam Hussein, the grandson of Muhammad, the holy prophet of Islam, peace be upon them, was martyred with his companions and family members. Arbaeen processions send a message of justice, faith, and unity. The commemoration extends beyond any religion and is engaged in by all those who believe in humanity.
Arbaeen marks the culmination of the 40-day period of mourning after the tragedy of Karbala, which happened on 10th Muharram in the Islamic calendar. The event marks a heroic battle of good versus evil, justice against injustice, where the sacrifice of Imam Hussein, his 72 companions and family members showed strength and determination against the forces of Yazid, the tyrannical ruler who established his position at the helm by virtue of the sword rather than the word. Yazid ibn Muawiyah's forces brutally and mercilessly slayed the innocent followers of justice after keeping them thirsty for 3 days. This act of heroism attracts millions of people from around the world.